Thanks for listening to the Fangoria Podcast Network. This is Natasha, the Vanguard of the Vault at Fangoria, and I'm excited to introduce the first episode of Casualty Friday. Casualty Friday is hosted by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. We lock Tiffany, Felissa, and Kane in the vault for 2 days with microphones, and this is the crazy result. These horror favorites share stories from their unique lives that they have never told anyone before. Oh, and a fair warning, someone might die. In this episode of Casualty Friday, Tiffany, Felissa, and Kane discuss how they began their careers in the horror genre. Enjoy.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm Felissa Rose, and before we get into this episode, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Fangoria Magazine. It's always been my favorite magazine. I grew up on it. It was the first convention I went to, and I've always loved it. It supported Sleepaway Camp. Thank you, Fangoria. You are the best. Fangoria Magazine is now a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition. Each issue includes set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, and minimal ads, all printed on collectible grade paper stock that reimagines the classic magazine for a 2019 audience. You'll see familiar names like Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and you'll see bylines that will just rip your dick off, like Barbara Crampton and S. Craig Zahler. And the best part? It's print only, just like the good old days. So go to Fangoria.com to subscribe today. And I want to tell you all about Fright Rags. Woo! Fright Rags is the premier place for horror apparel and accessories from all your favorite creature features, your slasher flicks, and your cult classics. Now in their 16th year, Fright Rags has officially licensed products for over 50 films, releasing new collections every week. Get 10% off your first order. Head on over to fright-rags.com and enter code FANGO40 at checkout to activate your discount. That's fright-rags.com.
Fangoria presents Casualty Friday.
Thank God it's Casualty Friday. Bust out your Hawaiian shirt, your Crocs, and your chainsaw. It's time to kick back with your wild and crazy hosts. I'm Tiffany Shepis.
I'm Felissa Rose.
And I'm Tony Todd. I'm kidding. I'm Kane Hodder. Sorry to disappoint you.
Let the break room bloodletting begin. You're listening to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk about why horror.
Why horror?
It's a good question.
It's an
why did you choose
question.
It? Why are we here? How did you get started?
Me? I actually, you know, being a stunt person for, at the time, 11 years, I was just a fan of horror. My favorite movie.
Like growing up?
Yeah. My favorite movie of all time is still The Exorcist.
Oh, I think it was best movie.
Groundbreaking best horror film. And still holds up. But I was just a fan and a working stunt person. And I did a movie called Prison with Rennie Harlan, Viggo Mortensen, and John Buechler. And I played a character in there that had a heavy makeup that Buechler applied to me. And I only worked in it 2 days, but Buechler liked how I worked in the makeup. The following year, he started suggesting me to play Jason. So unfortunately, John recently died. Was at his funeral. He's sadly missed, but he is the reason that I ever became Jason.
Wow. So horror kind of chose you.
It really, it seems kind of, lame to say that, but it's actually
it's not true.
Was it so different being like a fan of the genre and then actually being, you know, involved in making the movies? Did you feel a difference?
I mean, obviously, you can imagine there has been 6 Friday the 13th. You know, before I ever came around. So the character is widely known worldwide. And now all of a sudden I'm in the position of possibly playing the character. And I think I've talked about this a little bit before, but I had to do a screen test for on film that we shot on a soundstage and just had me doing, you know, wearing a version of the costume, which I wish I could locate, because, you know, that would have been a cool thing to own. But we shot a bunch of scenes on film as me as Jason killing my buddy Alan Marcus, who was in the movie. And that convinced them after watching it on film that, okay, this is the guy. And I just recently, like a year ago, found out that Beekler financed that entire thing himself.
Wow.
Because he That's believed crazy. In me playing the character. So he said, oh, look, I'll pay for this. We'll put him on film to prove that it's going to work out, because, you know, CJ did a good job in part six and people were thinking that should be him again. So I got very lucky and it was all Beekler.
Wow. Well, rest in peace, Beekler. You're a cool guy. We did a movie together with Beekler, a movie that never came out, but Monsterpiece Theater.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
It's an oldie buddy goodie. So fans out there should go search for that. I was as well a genre fan, like super, super genre fan. Just kind of one of those kids that when my mom would go out of town on the weekends, it'd be my older brother and I having parties and everybody get drunk and watch crazy, campy indie horror films. And our favorite in our house was like the campier the better. So a lot of Troma stuff, a lot of Full Moon stuff, a lot of Corman stuff. And I became this super obsessed fan of the Scream Queen. And it was like these ladies were sexy and they were cool and they were fun and they were funny. And like the Brink Stevens and the Julie Strains and Michelle Bowers of the world
Linnea Quigley.
Like they were like the supreme goddesses to me. So when I was a kid just going to a school, you know, a regular kid school in Manhattan, there were a bunch of actor kids that went there and they would read an actor's paper called Backstage. And they were all like, you know, circling their auditions. I'm like, let me see that. And like, I looked at one and there was an audition for a Troma movie. And it was a movie called Tromeo and Juliet. And I was like, they're looking for extras. I'm totally going. And I cut school and I went down there.
How old were you?
15, maybe, something like that. And I'd done like acting classes here and there in New York, but never in my wildest dreams could you be an actor. Because I didn't, in my head, you had to have family members that, you know, got you into the business. And like, I think the closest I came, I think they shot like a Tootsie Roll commercial in like my backyard. Like, and I was like, maybe they'll give us free stuff. And so I cut school and I went down to the audition, and in my head, I'm like, I've got to tell them I do something spectacular. I'm going to tell them I'm a black belt in jujitsu. So I did. I lied and I said I knew jujitsu and I could do all these crazy things, but like I could fight, but like street fighting.
You're crazy.
And so they were like, show us some moves. And I did some wacky, weird shit. And I think I beat up a PA in the audition, and James Gunn and Lloyd Kaufman, thankfully, were like, this is amazing. We're going to give you a part. And they actually gave me a real part. But I lied because they were like, sign your release forms. You're 18, right? And I'm like, of course I am. And I signed it. And then I went home and in my head, I'm like, oh man, this is how people get blacklisted from Hollywood. I have to tell them the truth. And so I called and they're like, so what do you need to tell us? I'm like, well, in all the excitement, I forgot how old I was. I'm not 18, I'm 17. So I lied again.
What were you, 16?
15.
15.
What an ass. You lied twice.
I lied twice. And thankfully, it didn't matter anyway. And I ended up playing Peter, the bodyguard to the Capulet family in Tromeo and Juliet, which brought me then to kind of have that weird, surreal experience of now getting brought to my first convention, which was a Fango convention in Manhattan. Sitting with people like Linnea Quigley and Brink Stevens and Julie Strain and going, what? I'm here signing autographs. And I was signing them for free or a dollar, I think it was, because I was like, I don't know what to do here. Yeah. And they were crappy lithographs. And it was such a surreal moment. And then like getting to be around you guys. Like I didn't meet you till many years later, but like seeing Kane at a convention, I'm like, what? I'm here signing.
And this was what year?
95, maybe, something like that. 97. I don't know. Somewhere in that ballpark. But it was weird.
So you really wanted to be in the horror genre. Like you.
I did, but I never thought it was an obtainable thing. Like I thought it was just like a little kid that's like, yeah, I want to be in movies. Because like, who wouldn't want to be in movies? It's a fun, cool job. And it certainly beats being a banker, although bankers have regular paychecks and 401ks. So keep your banker job.
Fuck them. I
that was Felissa Rose, by the way, bankers. I like you.
Well, the genre chose me. because I wanted to do musical theater. So I was living in New York City and tapping my way down the streets and singing.
Fame, I was like, wanna live forever.
And then my mom got me a manager in New York, and my first audition was for a horror movie called Sleepaway Camp. And they wanted a flat-chested...
Okay. And so obviously you didn't get that one.
They wanted the little girl with the penis.
And a wide-eyed little girl, and I was 12, and I went into the audition, and Robert Hiltzik and I immediately, the writer-director, like just loved each other. And I walked out like, Mom, I got that part. And she was like, all right, settle down, little one. But she was such a stage mother, my mom. She's like, oh my God, this is great. You can get a career in this wonderful business. Meanwhile, I spoiler alert, had a penis at the end of the movie. And they were asking her if they could strap a dick on to me.
Asking your mom?
Yeah.
And Joan's like, do whatever you want to my daughter. We're famous.
It's fantastic. I could see the Broadway lights from here.
Your dick will be the biggest in Hollywood.
The biggest dick ever.
Hello, Joan.
We love you. And then I really loved the art form. It was like being on the set and seeing the special effects and watching how... You know, Ed French, our special effects artist, created all of these amazing kills. It was just fascinating to me. And then I fell in love with, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Shining and Magic and Mad Men and all these great movies of that era. The late 70s, Friday the 13th, Halloween was just amazing to me. So it was kind of like I was brought in that way.
Right. And then you can imagine that when there's a character that everyone knows and you're the one putting that mask on now, I felt like, oh my God, if I fuck this up, then this is a chance of a lifetime.
This is it. Yeah,
that's true. Well, I didn't even think they were going to keep me in the movie. That's how screwed up I was. Like, I was hoping I did a good job as Angela, but I remember rapping and thinking, oh shit, I hope I was okay in that part. Maybe I won't even make it to the...
But I think we all always, like, if you care enough about what you're doing, you're always going to have a bit of self-doubt,
think, I could have done
this. I could have done better there, I could have done this a different way.
Always.
But like me, so do you guys think, do you think that being that all three of our films, first films were horror movies, that made people look at you differently when it came to mainstream parts coming your way?
100%. I was then auditioning for sitcoms. I was up for Give Me a Break and Charles in Charge. And they were like, but she's the girl from Sleepaway Camp. And in the 80s, first of all, they wanted blonde hair and blue eyes.
Sure.
So they looked at me and they were like, you don't even have the right look. But you were also in a horror movie.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They said it straight up. Did you?
Between now and then, like, it's so different. Like, where I thought, like, Scream Queen, like, I am on top of the world. And I thought, man, I've got like 5,000 people in my fan club, like when fan clubs were a thing, thought that was a big deal until I actually met like a real life Hollywood person who's like, you're 5,000 people in your fan club. I had a failed TV show on NBC that had 500,000 viewers and we didn't get renewed. And I was like, oh, perspective. Like my little horror career doesn't mean anything.
Right. No, and I wanted to stay in horror. So to me, I didn't give a shit. I was like, it didn't matter. It never mattered to me. Not then, not today. I could give a shit about the mainstream, the TV shows.
Oh, like, see, I want it all. I want mainstream as much as more than anyone can taste it. But in the secret world of me, it would be a mainstream horror show. Just to have the reach that, like, I mean, you've had it with the Friday the 13th stuff, like having like the big giant premieres. And, I've had to make 100 little horror movies to kind of lead up to that one. So I need that. I want the big one.
With me, I never started doing dialogue until after I was known as Jason. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have any acting training at all in my past.
That's amazing because you're so good.
I've always said if I have any acting talent at all, it's just watching quality actors perform. As a stunt coordinator, I'll sit on the set. Prime example being Charlize Theron. I was a stunt coordinator on Monster, and I was there every day just in case we came up with some action. But I often didn't have much to do, so I could just watch her. Whereas everybody else on the set has a job to do. They're always distracted. I could just sit there and watch her prepare for a scene. And I learned.
That's one of my favorite movies. I just have to ask you, was that outrageously like?
It was unbelievable. Just to observe, be an observer of her talent.
Did you see her process while you were like,
Yeah, that's why it was so nice, because I was almost never distracted by something else, where I could just be a fly on the wall, maybe not around her constantly because I could get a vibe that when she wants to be alone, stuff like that. But so often I could just watch how she got somewhere in her head. And I don't think anybody else saw that.
Which is amazing too, though, because if you listen to any of the biggest, most famous actors, they'll tell you the hardest job as an actor is to be able to observe and to listen and to do it without looking like you're trying. Because like we can all talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, but the hardest part, at least for me even, when you have nothing to say in a scene, you're like, oh crap. Now I have to like act like I give a shit about what this other actor's saying instead of going, what's my next line? What's my next line? Yeah.
And Patty Jenkins directed the movie. And she,
Wonder Woman.
She went on to do Wonder Woman and two now, I guess. And she, you know, while I was watching the process of the film, I was thinking, God, I wish I could be in this thing other than just coordinating the action. And Patty comes over and says, you know, I think I'm going to have you play the cop that arrests Charlize at the end of the movie. I was like,
yes,
you fucking kidding me. Yeah. And she goes, you're going to be a police officer. And I was like, great. I mean, because if anything, at that time, I was playing nothing but bad guys. For obvious reasons. And she said, I said, a cop. And she goes, yeah, it's, you know, in the biker bar and you're going to be undercover. And I said, oh, well, so it's the same look I always have.
I don't have to change my ugliness.
But I got to.
Different motivation.
Oh my God. I got to do the scene with her and she won an Oscar for it. So that's kind
of
cool.
That's kind of amazing.
One of the best movies. Yeah.
Yeah. I've done some movies that have won Razzies, you know.
But so as far as the acting, you know, as a stunt person, you're in the background. You have actors very often taking credit for stuff you've done.
That's true.
On screen. I've seen actors. I almost said one name, but I was sitting with his stunt
double, watching
the guy do an interview on Entertainment Tonight, saying about how hard some of the physical stuff that he did in the movie, because it's a big action movie.
Oh, and I know exactly who you're talking about. That sucks. That's so unfair.
I'm looking at the guy that did all the fucking work and this actor is taking
all the credit
for it. And just, that's the way it goes.
That sucks. Like, it's how it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is.
But that's interesting. And it leads us to a question that we all wanted to talk about. And is acting in the horror genre harder or easier than other genres? Because people often go, oh, they're just genre actors. There's horror movie actors.
It's the hardest. Because, you know, in life, I'm not usually running away from a man with a...
No, she runs to the man.
Running from the man and the mask and the... And, you know, you're... The amount of emotion and fear and trying to make it look natural and really authentic is quite,
well, that,
you know, challenging.
And also the conditions are generally not the same as like the frivolous romantic comedy where you're just, you know, on a bright sunny day in Tacoma, you know, you're
Victor Crowley, run up the wet, you know,
you're in a gross plane, it smells, it's hot, or then it's cold. Like they're never desirable. It's never like,
and your makeup process took 15 minutes probably. Mine took 3.5 hours every fucking day.
Of course. Yeah. No, I think it's a difficult genre to act in.
Yeah.
Very, very
You
difficult.
Know, or you're also sometimes, you know, waiting often like, you know, there's a CGI monster that you're having to react to, you know, a tennis ball on a hook that a grip is holding and you're supposed to act like this thing is terrifying.
That's a good point.
That is a good point.
Most people wouldn't even think about that part of it.
Tough things to do. You know, sometimes you don't even have your co-stars in the same room, you know, because they're in 3 hours of makeup. Like we didn't see you on Victor Crowley for, you know, until day 9.
And it was scary as shit.
Oh, when you find
yourself. And when you're, you know, off doing your method and getting into character. I mean, I was panicked and crying before we even started shooting that scene.
What would you see me be doing?
So it was night shoot, and Tiffany and myself and Perry and Krista, Laura, the whole cast were in like under a, you know, we're in the tent, the warming tent, and you're all the way off in the distance in sort of like the woods, and it's dark, and all we hear, oh my God, just thinking about it, I'm starting to cry. You're like, you know, getting amped up. And I heard you were listening to music. He doesn't associate with us, right? He's not, we have nothing to do with Victor Crowley. So we know where it's like Adam says, okay, and you're up next. It's like, what? My time to die? And then you go and you don't look at me or interact with me. There's no connection or relationship that we typically have. And then, you know, you're behind me, and just the energy feeling you behind me was so, it terrorized me. It was so scary that
she was really upset. Like, really.
I was like bawling my eyes. We did it twice, but I know the first time is what they kept, because from that moment when you're chasing me, it's just, holy shit.
And you
believe
know,
the scene. Believe you.
See, I didn't have any of that because Victor Crowley did not kill me in the movie.
But she has the most, you know, the saddest death and the most emotional scene.
Sad.
It was still satisfying to Victor, though.
Just that.
He died.
You're so kill that baby. Incredible
die,
in that
baby.
Role.
But, you know, the amping up stuff that I do certainly gets my energy going. And
Tell us, what are you going through?
I am, it's hard to really put into words. I am just trying to get into that mindset of the character that I'm playing, whatever it is at the time, and just enraging, and, you know, I'll be punching things and smashing my head against things.
And we
hear
you.
No question. Like, do you not think that's a little dangerous to do method wise when you're playing a serial killer or a monster?
I mean, because I may carry it over too much to the victim.
Correct.
No.
Or are you just such a professional at it now that.
I don't know if it's such a professional, but I think it's, I control it pretty.
You have your boundaries, so you can go.
I've always said to, when I talk to actors before we start a film, if I'm going to be killing them, I always say, when it comes to your death scene, it's not going to be easy and it's not going to be comfortable, but I'm not going to hurt you. It's going to be rough.
So there's a trust thing.
Right. It's going to be rough, and don't think I'm going to go easy on you, but I'm also not going to hurt you.
No, and I never felt like it was, you know, I was so excited to get killed by Victor Crowley. That was the first thing, but I felt completely safe. I was just excited by the challenge of watching you create the character, a character I've loved for so many years. And so there's a lot going on the other side.
Right.
But I always felt safe and excited. So adrenaline is...
I think that's what's awesome about you being a stuntman as well as an actor, though. Because, I mean, I did a movie with a serial killer film, kind of famous one, where I fight a very badass serial killer. And he was not a stuntman. He was just an actor. And he, you know, who knows why it happened, but a lot of people got hurt because he got so into it. And he's very, very good in the part, but so into it that he kind of lost himself in those scenes. So like there's a scene where I'm fighting this guy, and friends and fans of mine that will know what movie I'm talking about, because I talked about it before, but now I don't feel comfortable hating on the dude. But you know, because maybe he didn't do it on purpose, right? Like, you know, it sucks, but people get hurt if you're not trained that way.
And such a fine line to walk, keeping it appearing to be uncontrollable rage, mm-hmm. but you're still have to be aware of the person's safety, you know?
Yeah, it's true. I did a movie with Harrison Smith called Camp Dread, and my kill is they're just pouring like shit down my throat, like, you know, some kind of poison, and I got waterboarded. And I was back, and it was, Jesus. And the first AD is like, cut, like, this is fucked up. She's like really legit going into like, you know, a seizure.
Really?
Seizure?
I mean, I hope they used it.
They couldn't do it.
No, but I mean,
they couldn't do another
that.
One. Yeah, that was it.
Beautiful. Can we watch that scene for like romance
and
nights?
Roll tape?
Yeah. I got to see that.
Yeah, watch it. It's
Sean
insane.
And I want to watch that on date night.
But I think you're right. A stunt person.
Look at how much pleasure she gets. Waterboarded up in that moment.
Ow. Did it hurt? Really bad?
It was great. No, it was great. I mean, you know, I knew that in my head I was going to be okay, but it did. There were seconds where it was scary.
I had a big talk with you, Kane, beforehand because we were dealing with water and, you know, trapped under stuff in the movie. And he was really concerned with like how it's going to go down, how it's going to be played, like that someone will always be there that it's not going to be.
And none of us could complain because this bitch was underwater.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, way to go. Thanks for the pressure. On the first day before we started shooting, Adam Green's like, all right, guys, it's going to be a tough shoot. I know we're never going to do another Hatchin film, but we're going to do this. But if any of you want to complain, remember, look to Tiffany. I'm like, shut the fuck up, dude. Like, don't have all these people hate me. Like, their day is going to suck, too. Like,
yeah, fucking, you know. So here, alert, I get a fucking cell phone arm up my vagina and through my mouth. Where's my speech?
Yeah, no, but I'm also now like, all right, so now I'm under the water. I can't fucking complain. Like, this sucks.
And it wasn't like nicely warmed, fresh water either.
Fresh? No, you peed in it, I think.
I'm sure
it
I did.
Yeah, it's disgusting, vile human being, Kane Hodder.
Yeah, well.
But that's why we're all friends, and I think why we all chose to do this podcast together. Because.
Because I pissed on both of them before.
Yeah. You
know. And we loved every second of it.
I need a hepatitis shot.
Tetanus.
Tetanus. What else? You have rabies.
I wanted to just go back real quick about me being in the woods.
It's always go back
up.
And talk
no.
about
no,
again.
I love that. Because I hope you can see the visual. Like, so you're in the woods. It's
But it's, I haven't really talked about it too much, but part of that whole amping up process that I do, and I'm wondering if I'm shooting myself in the foot here, but is for my own entertainment.
I love you.
Because I know somebody's watching me. So I'm fucking with you. It's not necessarily just for my energy.
Like your process.
I'm doing it because it's fun. I'm fucking uncomfortable in that makeup. And I got to do things to entertain myself. So if I know I'm fucking your head up by banging my head against a tree out there, that's entertaining to me.
And it's great for the scene because then it's like, fuck, what is he doing?
It helps your performance, energy and... You know, yeah,
he's basically expecting you to thank him right now, is what he's saying.
Oh, no,
like, that, your performance was because
I was
of
entertaining
me.
I'll kiss
myself.
Your ass later, too. No, that it's so fun, you know, creating those scenes. And
it is always fun and it's always hard. And we already discussed how trying some of these locations are, like weather, dealing with people waterboarding you, people getting, you know, forced underwater in a plane. So with all that said, was there ever a moment where any of you guys have considered like, you know what, I'm done with this. This is too hard. I got hurt on this. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to do commercials or something else.
No.
I'm going back to Broadway. No, never. If anything, it makes me want to do it more. I mean, I had a guy once and I was mic'd. And he had to like grab me out of a chair and you could hear my rib break.
Your rib?
What?
He broke my rib right there.
What?
So sometimes conditions, you know, and shit happens on set and the whole cast and crew heard it. But no, it's-
Who bear hugs someone like that?
Wow.
A big, huge dude who's not a stunt guy. And, but the point is, no, it's always challenging and fun and exciting. And I would never want to be in any other genre for, you know, multiple reasons.
I agree. I mean, there's no place that, I mean, look at us. Like, we've all known each other 20 plus years. And now we're like, you know, who do we want to do a
we're
podcast
family.
With? Each other.
Right.
But there have been moments on my stuff where I'm like, you know what? Enough is enough. Like, I hate doing the head molds. Like, I can't breathe in this thing. I don't trust. Like, I don't like the stupid jokes the FX people make when they're like, we're leaving the room now. And like, you know, you're covered
in
plaster.
They always think that's a fucking
original
joke.
They think it's hilarious.
Joke.
It's
and put your head in plaster.
She come with me for Victor Crowley when
I did
mine. I had to take Susanix. She had to hold my hand.
She tells me, she's like, I need someone to come with me. I'm terrified. And then I get there. She's so doped up. Like, I could have left and, you know, went to Tijuana. She's like, I feel great.
She actually did. She brought me a purse. No, it sucks when we're in those special
so,
effects.
So there's been moments with me that I'm like, I'm done. Like, no more effects movies unless it's a huge, you know, giant, insane budgeted film. And then the next movie comes on, I'm like, do I get a head mold again? Do you get to cover my head in this? Do you get to chop my face off? Like, so I think it's like childbirth. You forget, right?
Yeah,
like,
then you want to go back.
The pain.
And when you have the makeup like I've worn in Friday, a lot of the Fridays and the Victor Crowley, you know, you can barely eat because the dentures pretty much have to stay in. It wasn't until I did a big budget movie called Nothing But Trouble. I don't know.
I loved that movie, the Drew Demi Moore movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was wearing a makeup. I doubled Dan Aykroyd as.
And John Candy.
No. As Bobo. The fat baby wearing a diaper and galoshes.
I see the resemblance.
A lot of scenes, that was me as Bobo.
Really?
And I didn't realize how different it could be on a huge budget movie like that. At lunch, the first day in the makeup, they said, okay, we're going to take your head off so you can eat. I was like, what?
Wow.
They took a half an hour to take the makeup off my head so that I could eat properly. After lunch, reapplied it. And wow. I was like, that is really living when you can take your makeup off.
No, we never can.
Because any other time I've had to wear it for 12 hours.
They stick us in the corner and they're like, you'll have some salad later.
Here's a straw.
Yeah. When people are like at conventions, you know, wow, your life is so glamorous. I'm like, glamorous. Yeah. I think I bought Arby's and pizza for my last set because there was no craft service.
Right. I know. That's
so
funny.
Glamorous.
Yeah, it really isn't what you expect. Might think.
No.
I think we had some pretty interesting fan questions this week. Fans out there, we all put it out there to our fans and friends.
Our friends, our fans,
you know,
I hate that word.
Felissa hates
that word.
Fan.
I hate the word fan. Fanatic. I like my friends.
Continue. Felissa's friend, one of them out there, wrote her a question. Why don't you start with it?
Okay. So he is my friend, Jovi. Jovi Skull, who I love. I met him at Flashback Weekend. And he wrote on Twitter, because we get them on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook. What movie of yours do you wish more people have seen? And thank you. That's a great question. I would have to say Satan's Playground, because it's a movie I did in 2003, and I was really proud of it. I worked with Dante Tomaselli, who's a New Jersey filmmaker, and the cast was great. Ed Neal from original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The best.
He's amazing. Ellen Sandweiss from Evil Dead. And I really feel like our hearts were in it. It was a passion project. It's a great film, and I'm proud of the work. So Satan's Playground.
Did you die in it?
I know you love it. Kane loves Satan's Playground.
Did you
it's
die?
His favorite movie.
No, I'm the final girl.
Oh, very good.
All right, Satan's Playground. You heard it on the Fangoria Podcast Network. It's the movie that we all need to see. I got a question from Phil Dragota, and he wanted to know.
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
Phil is also my friend. Thanks, Phil, for writing this. And he asked, is there any chance of that Night of the Demons sequel ever happening? So Night of the Demons, I was a huge fan of Kevin Tenney's original. Oh, I was super excited to be a part of the remake. And then there was a script out there that was written. It was supposed to happen. It was really great. I don't know if it ever will, but there is a script for the sequel, and it brings back a lot of the original cast. It brings back some new players, and who knows? Maybe Adam G and Sean Tretta and everybody will pull together, and there might be one, Phil. You never know. Maybe it'll be produced by Fangoria. You never know.
The Fangoria Podcast Network. You heard it here.
And the Night of the Demons sequel. It may happen.
Kane?
Well, I have a question from Bud, Roy Namur Beach.
Hi, Bud.
Hi, Bud.
And he said, what scares Kane Hodder?
Oh, see, Bud had to go and get deep and serious.
I know.
I like that.
And so my answer is nothing. Next. Who's next?
Bud, we love you.
Yeah, Bud, that was a stupid question.
Thanks for being our friend.
Thanks for writing in.
But I for a while, I could never figure out an answer for this question because, you know, I love all the stuff that people normally are afraid of, heights and
spiders.
Creatures and, you know, you've seen me at cons and walking around with a tarantula on my head because somebody has creatures there or a snake or something. I love that stuff. And heights, I've always enjoyed. So there's none of
What about low places?
He's okay afraid, for you?
Yeah.
He's afraid of
afraid of being in
the couch. Maybe it's something horrible.
Something weird, like textures, you know, like felt.
I couldn't really come up with anything, but then I thought, oh, well, now I'm 64 now. So there is something that is pretty fucking scary. And it's not a fun, lighthearted answer. But if you really want to know what scares me, it's fucking dementia.
Oh, man, I know.
When you can get to the point as a human being of not recognizing your family, that is terrifying. So there's your fun and lighthearted answer. If you really want to know what scares me, that does.
That is scary. And I only hope that I can have like dementia that I'm like I can choose. Like choose to not remember you guys.
She doesn't want to remember me.
Well, you can always pretend.
It's always me.
You know, I'm 64. Who the fuck are you again?
What?
I don't remember you. But, you know.
No, that's super scary.
That is scary.
I actually play app games on my phone for memory because I had a grandmother who had Alzheimer's. And at first, I remember when it first started, it was kind of funny because you're like, somebody, you think someone stole the rack of lamb out of your fridge? You know, you're like, yeah, that's hilarious.
That's
Greek grandmother. You know, because you're like, that's so weird. Like, why would someone steal your lamb? But then as it progressed, it's less and less funny that, you know, they think things have moved around their house, which haven't, or, you know. And that is a terrifying thing. Way to bring this down, Kane.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing it.
So thanks to Fangoria Network.
We're all going to get mental health checks, take our ginkgo
network.
Biloba.
No, I think it's a real thing. And I think it also comes down to, you know, just as we get older, you know, you appreciate life more. And I'm glad that right now we're all doing well and healthy, and
sure.
I love you guys.
You appreciate life more. You also don't want to forget the awesome things that happen in your life. I think that's like a scary part. Like, would you imagine, like, you know,
yeah, no shit,
not remembering these stories that we're able to tell?
Thank you
right
for
now.
Sharing that with us.
Yeah, that's I, on the other hand, I am scared of heights. I am actually like a little bit terrified of them, like to the point where if you were like, you know, yo, I got $1 million and you should go up in that plane and jump out, I'd be like, oh, fuck yourself. Take your $1 million and shove it up your ass.
Wow.
I could not do it. I couldn't do it.
And then what, do you remember the story from high school that I always tell that I went with, I was playing on the basketball team. I was out in the Marshall Islands. So the only way we could play other high schools was to go to Hawaii. And we went to Hawaii to the Ala Moana Hotel in near Waikiki. And a few of us went to the top floor because it had an observation deck with a railing.
Oh, God.
And it was 35 floors. And I thought it would be fun to entertain my friends by climbing on the outside of the balcony, holding on to the rail like this, where there's nothing but 35 floors down. And they started freaking out, which was very entertaining for me. And they were yelling at me, get off there. They didn't want to touch me in case I slipped. So just to make it even better, I said, hey, guys, what's the matter? And I let go of the rail a couple times and then grabbed on before I went. And they just shit themselves. And I was like, that was fun. I should do something.
I just had a crazy attack listening to that story.
I swear that the whole thing is true. I'm not exaggerating anything.
Crazy.
And
crazy
I
person.
Thought it was easy because if you think about it, it's no harder to do 35 floors up than if you were 1 foot up. Doesn't make it any more difficult.
Okay, kids,
physically.
Don't try this at home.
I don't understand.
These are crazy stunt
Why?
People that
because
do these things.
What did you fall on?
He didn't fall.
No.
You see, you're saying that you just like...
I let go, and then grabbed on again before I fell.
What do you think? He's a cartoon? He fell on an awning and bounced back up? No, he did not fall.
Who's with me? Didn't you guys...
Landed in a palm tree?
On the Fangoria Podcast Network. Didn't you guys feel like he fell?
No, nobody thought this at all. No, he said he let go, held back on.
It's right. Still scary.
And I was on their balcony by myself, climbed back over and laughed all the way down.
You're such a great pal. It's a good friend.
You're... Jesus Christ. Well, yeah.
So that's
on that,
why.
On that note.
I went into stunts instead.
On yeah, that note.
That's great.
That closes the coffin on this ridiculous episode.
Oh, nicely
per
played.
Usual, one of our actors didn't perform like the others.
Yeah, that's and obvious.
We don't know how to say it.
Fairly obvious.
We don't know how to talk about this. We're really, really
the fact
sad
that you did that to your friends.
We're really sad to say, but we're going to have to kill off Kane.
Get wow off the weapon.
What weapon should we choose?
Let's do the chainsaw.
Chainsaw! Goodbye, Kane. You did not perform.
Oh, no.
That story kills us all, so we have to kill you.
We have to kill you. We are really sad that you didn't let go that day on the 34th floor.
Oh, many people are.
He was such an asshole to your friends. Give it to him! Give it to him!
Casualty Friday is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. Executive producers, Dallas Sanye, Phil Nobile Jr., Matt Mangiarides, and Justin Martell. Produced by Natasha Pesetta. Associate producer, Jessica Safavamir. Art and design by Jason Koslerich. Sound recording design and mixing by Natasha Pesetta. Music by John Brennan. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi and Rachel Wilson.